This is a three-part series for rabbis and rebbetzins on Hilchos Pekuach Nefesh and the categories of cholim. Just in terms of, you know, my background.
I have a doctorate in clinical bioethics, and that's kind of like my area of interest. But oftentimes we say that, you know, or at least I like to say that there's, you know, on the one hand, there's medical ethics, and that's really like Yoredeia Shin Lamed Tes. That's like a lot of the, you know, medical decision-making, trying to apply Jewish values to encountering very complicated new scenarios and things like that. And it's often very gray and lots of differences of opinions and difficult to apply. So that's medical ethics. Then they say there's medical halacha. Medical halacha is somewhat different. That's really Shin Chav Chet. That's 328 Shabbos Or HaChaim. That's like, you know, what can we do when it comes to people who have various types of illnesses in relation to violating Shabbat? And obviously it's not only Shabbat or Yom Tov, but it ends up being relevant for many areas of life, as we'll discuss over the next few days. Also, when it comes to medical ethics, oftentimes we say that, you know, it's hard to be an expert in that field. It requires so much detailed knowledge and intricate experience. Whereas with medical halacha, there is more of an expectation of expertise, especially amongst Jewish leaders, as was emphasized by Rabbi Nitz. We're going to see in some of the sources. So it's one of the areas that it's crucial. In fact, there really should be, I don't know that there is, but there really should be like a rabbi's review, like every 3 year requirement of like to maintain certification to be like, you know, a spiritual leader, that one reviews this, what we're going to learn. So it's like, it's really, really, really important. And what we're going to do, I think the methodology is there's just so much that I want to share with you. It's totally impossible. I mean, meaning the amount I want to cover today, we couldn't cover it in 3 days, but we're going to cover it in one. So it's going to require a lot of kind of like quickly just kind of mentioning some areas and not really going in depth on them. And then other areas kind of drilling down and saying like, let's stop here and like focus in a little bit more. And the source sheet that I sent out, I really wanted to try to make it kind of clear and not too overwhelming. And it was pretty long itself, but it's really, and I'm going to pull it up in a second, that we'll be learning from actually while we're studying, that you can save. I just didn't want to send it to you beforehand because I didn't want it to get too like overwhelming. It just would be impossible to like do everything. Also, I think I have it in here somewhere. Yeah. I meant to mention it to Rabbi book on this topic. I've published two books. One is on medical ethics and one's on medical halacha. So the one on medical halacha, that the topic we're going to be discussing, I'm happy to send you all a copy. So if you want a copy, just put your address in the chat or let someone know whatever address we should mail it to, and we'll be happy to just send one in the mail, obviously. So we know that Pekuach Nefesh, saving a life, overrides Shabbos. And a lot of this is the Gemara Numa. As we're going to see, most of these halachos come up in either Shabbos or Yom Kippur. Obviously, for obvious reasons, those are the two areas we have these discussions. And the Gemara says, right from the beginning, obviously, so one thing we can do, it's not just about Shabbos, but also someone who is sick, machilinoso, a few of the varim tamei, we can even feed them non-kosher food. And obviously, also, it's mipnei shuhu safik nefashos, safik nefashos, doches haShabbos. And also, any safik overrides Shabbos. Now, one of the things that, you know, as I said, I'm not going to go into too many of the Gemaras on this. I know that you saw that's, I think, hopefully what I can bring to this. I mean, you have bring is, you know, practical experience. So that's why I'm going to focus mostly on contemporary post-scheme and approaches that we take that sometimes aren't even mentioned so much in the books, but I think that are really relevant to know. So that's why my focus is not going to be on the Gemaras, even though I know clearly a lot of you have a lot of experience learning Gemara, but that's why I'm going to go quickly with these Gemaras. But just, there is one really important. So this Gemara Numa in Pei-Hei, I only put a piece of it there. But if you were to actually look up the Gemara, I think it's seven different theories that the Gemara quotes for what is the source for the fact that, and the Gemara says, and this is going to be in the Shulchan Aruch as well, Tanur Rabbanim Mifachim Bekuach Nefesh B'Shabbos for Azariz Harizim Meshubach, the faster you are to violate Shabbos, the better. The Ain Sarich Li Torah Shus Mibes, you don't need to get permission, you just do it. So what's the source for this fact that we know that you can violate Shabbos? So there's a lot of different suggestions the Gemara gives, but we really conclude with two. The Gemara itself concludes with one, but we'll end up seeing in the postgame that two of them actually end up getting quoted, which is really a unique and interesting issue. Because, you know, the Gemara says, so at the end of this, the last two, it says, Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh Omer, V'shamer b'nei Yisrael says Shabbos, Amru Torah, chalel lev Shabbos achas, k'di sheyishmeru Shabbos tos harbe. You violate one Shabbos so that you can observe many. Then the Gemara rejects that opinion and says, no, Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, I have a hasam, have a mina, didi, adifim, didi. I would give you the best reason, and that is v'chai behem, v'lo sheyamos behem. It's because of v'chai behem. But the truth is, chalel of Shabbos achas is quoted. It is quoted by as one of the reasons very frequently. So, for example, actually, just, you know, because it's like in the news so much lately. So one thing people, when we talk about issues of abortion, so we know that in halacha, a fetus does not have the status of a human being, right, of an adult. But yet we can violate Shabbos to save a fetus. How could it be that we are allowed to end a fetus's life, right, to save the mother's life or for other reasons, but yet we can also violate Shabbos? So the poskim quote this, the Ramban quotes this. He says, it's because chalel lev Shabbos achas, you can break one in order to be able to do many because it will eventually observe many Shabboses. It comes up, for example, OCD, just we talked about mental health in halacha. There's a really fascinating tshuva Rav Asher Weiss wrote. What if someone has OCD such that they are told that they may not repeat words in davening? That's a very common issue that comes up. And they're told, you may not repeat ever. And let's say they say Kiddush wrong. And they know, I said Kiddush wrong. I just feel it. I got to say Kiddush again. But their treatment is, do not repeat davening ever. So can they now go without Kiddush or whatever it is, whatever part of the davening? That's just what his tshuva was about, Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva. So he says, based on the principle of chalel of Shabbos achas, violate one in order to be able to observe many, you can do that. So I'm just pointing this out because this v'sharm b'nei Yisrael Shabbos theory ends up being very relevant in halacha, even though we conclude that the actual reason is, and Rashi says it here, that Shmuel de Leisle Pircha, no one else can argue on Shmuel, that reason of the Chai Behem is the main reason. So we're going to come back to that in a minute because there's a lot to say about it, but let me just show you something, so where this leads to, because this ends up going exactly to what Rebbe Nit Dvor said. This is still just my introduction. So the Shulchan Aruch then says a few very important points, and by the way, just so you know where we're going with this, I learned this from Rabbi Linzer, so this is what I got from him when I was in Chovevei. Shin Chav Ches, you know, this siman in Shulchan Aruch is very complicated. Some of the se'ifim are not relevant anymore really so much today. Some of them are very relevant. It's kind of in and out of order. So I tried to break it up into an order that I think makes more sense. So not that I'm smarter than Rabbi Yosef Cairo, but just that, like, to be in the contemporary world, like, how does teaching it, how does it make most sense? So we're going to cover most of the siman in the next 3 days, but not in order. So just so you know, that's what we're doing right now. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Mishiyesh Cholish Sakana Mitzvah L'Chalav Shabbos. If someone has a dangerously ill patient, you should violate Shabbos. V'Hazaris Harizim Meshubach. Just exactly what the Gemara that we just read. V'Hashoel Harizim Shofetam. If you ask a question, that is like bloodshed because it's wasting time. You could have saved a life. And this Mishnah Berura is why I said, and exactly what Rabbi Twersky's source was when he got so upset. This Mishnah Berura is really, really, really important. So he says, Perush, Oso Aish Shehu Mischasei V'Yar L'Chal Shabbos B'Chol HaKazeh. This person who thinks they're so pious that they're not going to violate Shabbos Ki'im Ayidei Mora Harehu Shofech Dami. They have to ask a Shaila first. That is shedding blood. Shavot Shehu Holech L'Shol Yechla Shechol Yosef Yachol Yistaken. Their person's going to get sicker and they could die because you asked a question. For Kasuv Omer Lo Tamor Al Damriyecha. But the Yushalmi says even further. This is the powerful line. That's why I underlined it here. The Hanisha, it's not just the Shoel. It's Hanisha, the one who gets asked. Hare ze meguna. That is ridiculous that you got asked the question. Wait, why? So I'm a rabbi of a synagogue, right? If someone comes and says to me, Rabbi, you know, my loved one is sick because we didn't go to the hospital, even though it was deathly ill, but, you know, what was the right thing to do? I have to say to myself, how did they not know this? I'm their rabbi, and how did they not know this? Hanishal harezi meguna. Perush mishum sha'atama chacham b'makomo haya lalidrosh bepirka lechol kedei shiyadu kola'am v'lo yitztarchu lishol. They should have taught their community this message, and the fact that they didn't know it is the rabbi's fault for not having taught it. So it's not just hashoel harezi shovek damim, but hanishal harezi meguna. It's bad to get asked this question because you should be teaching it. So this is like a classic, like one of the classic things that a spiritual leader should be teaching their community as soon as they start their job. Is like crucial thing that they should be teaching is how important it is to be careful to save life, even if it means violating Shabbos. And it comes up in Hilchos Yom Kippur as well. Just to read it, we won't read it every source today, obviously, but just to emphasize this point. Every spiritual leader has to be thoroughly versed in these. Before Yom Kippur, just by thinking about it, saying, I'm not sure, someone could die. And let's say someone comes to me. Let's say, I'll just use me as an example. I'm in my shul. And someone says, Rabbi, I'm not sure. Should we eat on Yom Kippur because of this and that illness? And I say, you know what? I need to look it up. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah says, they should go ask somebody else while I'm looking it up. Forget it. It's embarrassing to me. Don't wait for Jason to go look it up. He should have known this. Go ask someone else who knows better. So I think that's just a very powerful, powerful line. And it speaks to the importance of learning this material for all of us. However, there are limitations to this, obviously. And this is part of what I want to share with you, is when I share some of the psukim of the various poskim throughout the ages, what I put on this sheet were intentionally trying to get a feel. Because I don't know, maybe I'm just not smart enough, but I don't know how to just give a one line like, well, here's where you do violate Shabbos without even asking, and here's where you have to be a little bit more careful. I feel like you have to just see some examples, and you start to just get a feel for it. And you can't necessarily summarize it in one line, but you have a feel, right, for when it's right, when it's not right. And that's part of what I want to do, because we're going to go back and forth. As much as we just emphasized how important it is to be Mechallel Shabbos when you have to be, there are times when we're not. And the Mishnah Berurah itself says, interesting line here. The Mishnah Berurah says, Vazaris, in the same line, quotes, you know, different sources, and it says, it has to be at least a refua yedua, which doesn't really make sense. I mean, didn't we say it has to be a suffake, you just do it? Why does it have to be a refua yedua? So my favorite answer to that is the Prima Gadin quotes the Rambam, which basically says, you know, it has to be a refua that at least is not refua sigulit, not totally illogical, right? It could be like, let's say someone comes to their neighbor and says like, oh, someone's very sick, should they go to the hospital? Say, no, actually what you should do is take a white billy goat, go between two medium-sized hills, kill the billy goat there, take some blood from the tail, you know, take that blood from the tail and mix it with Clorox bleach and circle it three times. You know, I don't know, I'm just making something up. But then at that point, it's like, no, I don't know if we can break Shabbos for that, because it just makes no sense. It's one thing if you want to try it during the week. Maybe not, but there has to at least be some logic to it. But if it's not FDA approved, but there is, like your doctor says, you know what, we've done clinical trials, it makes sense, maybe then you could. Maybe then you say, okay, it's a suffix, but there is logic to it. It makes sense. That's what the way the Rambam writes it. There's logic, but it makes sense. It's at least somewhat refuah baduka. It's been tested. Then there could be a lot more room to permit it. That's why there's a lot of discussion about that, because, you know, it's like, why did we just say, if there's a suffix, do it? And then we said, wait, if there's a suffix, don't do it. But this is the issue. And a lot of it comes down to the following issue, which we're not going to do justice to today, but I just want to just give you the issue, the feel for it, which is, the big question is Shabbos, when we have to be, to violate Shabbos, and, you know, I skipped it, but that Orach Chaim says, when we violate Shabbos, it's not violating Shabbos, right? That's Shmira Shabbos. When we break Shabbos to save a life, that's part of how we observe Shabbos, right? So we shouldn't feel bad. We don't have to do kapara for that. It's not like something that we actually broke Shabbos. We were observing the mitzvah of V'chai B'hem. But when we do that, is it because Shabbos is now hutra or dechuya? This is going to come out in a lot of our discussions, but there's a big debate. There seems to be a debate in the Rishonim. If it's hutra, if it's just everything's mutar, you just do whatever you need. It's hutra. If it's dechuya, it's just pushed off for now, so to speak. But it's not actually total as permissive. We should do as little as possible to not violate Shabbos as if possible. So, for example, and this comes up a lot, but just because I want to just show the basics of this. The way this comes up in the Mishnah Berurah, if we just look at this piece of Shulchan Aruch, it says, Haya cholish yesh b'sakana v'tzarech basar. Let's say the doctor says this patient is a cholish yesh b'sakana, needs meat. Shochtin lo, you can actually shecht the animal right then and there on Shabbos, like you would do on Yom Tov. V'ein omrim nachil nevela. Just give them a treif. There's some treif meat available. No, we don't say that. Aval im hayachol etzareich lachil l'altar. But they need to eat right away. Nevela muchenes miyad v'shchita mis'acheres lo. But if you have the nevela right now, and the shchita will take time, not everyone can just shecht an animal right there, then machin oso nevela. Then you give them the nevela. What's this all about? That, you know, you could shecht, but not if it's, you know, you would shecht, but not if it's not right away. So the Mishnah Berurah in his discussion on this says right here, Yesh omrim mishum the Shabbos hutra etzel b'chuch nefesh. That's because some say Shabbos is just whatever you need to do, you can do it for b'chuch nefesh. L'chein shochtin lo keder sheshochtin b'yom tov. V'filu isur derabanan im machin oso b'makum she'efshar lo dishchot. Times that. For this reason, you can do it. But then the Mishnah Berurah says, no. Ava harbe rishonim kasu de Shabbos rak dechuyahi. El hatam hu deshamayi keitz bechilas nevela velo yochal distakin. The concern here is that the reason why you can shecht the animals, not because you can just do whatever you want, but because we're afraid that the chula won't eat the nevela. Because they'll be afraid, they don't want to eat non-kosher food. That could be very traumatic for people. So therefore, you can shecht it. But we try to do as little as possible. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah says. That's the psak. That's what we conclude. It's not, I'll just show you. Now, this is the psak in general. I put in here, you have, for example, some Shmir Shabbos, right? That's the Shmir Shabbos says, because Mechalin as a Shabbos, that's all the Sky Adam. Yesh the Ma'it Kechol HaEfshar B'Siyas Yisrael. We should minimize as much as we can. Sorry, I just saw you're coming out. I have a psak where someone was told he may not daven and may not put on tefillin. Oh, interesting. Right. That's going back to the OCD. Yes. Interesting. And so we see here from the Shmir Shabbos that, we want to minimize as much as possible. We have the principle of a kal called Trila and, the gam yesh etzam same as chumras iser. And even if we can do a derabanan instead of deraisa, you know, we want to do a derabanan instead of deraisa, as much as we can, we are trying to minimize the isurim and kishim shiyesh the might be'etzim asiyas isurim v'chumras kain yesh the hagbil v'yesh the efshar as hetkev hatotzas and avaz mi'asiyas iser. And we try to have the outcome of what we do be as minimized as possible whenever we can. That's because of this principle of Shabbos being dechuya. He goes on. Mechalin es haShabbos latzalas chay adam. Rak kasher ein yifsharz laastos es hadavar beoso hayyilos mibilachas haShabbos. What if we could save the life without violating Shabbos? So obviously, then we want to not violate Shabbos to save their life. These are just examples of how we try to minimize the iser because we say Shabbos is dechuya. Yes, Rabbi Nidvora.
So of course, the danger is that the problem is that. Yes, and the danger is that people, that leads to the Rabbi Twersky example, right? Uh-huh. Which is, so it's tricky, right? I mean, like, there's a part of me that feels like putting in the Shmir Shabbos like that, you know, that's a little tricky because now there are going to be people who say, oh, see, I'm supposed to minimize Chol Shabbos, and therefore, I'm going to think twice before doing anything. So, you know, maybe the answer is that's exactly the kind of guidance the Rav Posek should be giving, but it's a hard call as to how you communicate that.
I totally agree. Let me go out of order for a second to show you something interesting in relation to that point. So first of all, this next source here is Yechami Das, Rav Avadi Yosef, and he shows how it's very possible that actually the majority of Rishonim is not like the Mishnah Berurah. The majority is that Shabbos is Hutra. And he even argues that the Rambam says that. But he says here, I'm going to read the whole thing, but I'll just read the first line. He says, "Yisrael for Shabbos shosol litzlos dino shel harav amagid v'ashochan aruch v'din im haShabbos hutra v'dechuyah tefukut nefesh." All of me shemikivan shana tovsim kadasa Rambam shel haShabbos dechuyah tzchun tzavash shosol hutra v'chein dasa Rashba etc. v'chein ein lahakel. But then he says, "V'ein devar muchrochim klal." Wait a second. Who says Shabbos is really dechuyah? Hein b'masha kava halacha she'ikar k'divrei ha'omrim she'shabbos dechuya v'lo hutra, shari rabim v'atsumim me'aposkim sovrim she'hutra. And then he says, maybe even the Rambam. And then, you know, let me show you something else. I didn't put it on the sheet before, but it's so interesting. I think about this source a lot. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik is quoted as saying the following. We know the Briskers are known as being very machmir with pikuach nefesh. So much so that people would ask them, the famous quote is, oh, I didn't know you Briskers were so lenient about Shabbos. And he'd say, no, we're not lenient on Shabbos. We're strict on saving life. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik has this fascinating quote where he says, not only are we do we violate Shabbos when there's a doubt, right? As we said before. But then he says, you know, that there's this whole thing, just to give you a background real quick, that we don't violate Shabbos for a baby born in the eighth month. That obviously we do not do today. That was just something that we don't really know what it means. And it was assumed that the baby wouldn't survive. And it's not something that we really follow. But anyways, in that category of the Ben Shmona. So it was, Talib Machlokas Rishonim in Pikuach Nefesh Shel Ubar Docha Shabbos. That was a question. Obviously today is not a question. And any, you know, we would say we would be Machal Shabbos to save the baby's life or the fetus's life. But then the Rav Arsovich says the following. Hatam hu sheben shmona shelo gamru sara v'tziparnav, that didn't yet have nails or hair, so it was considered a nafel. Nechshav ilu hu adayim b'mei imo, is considered still a fetus. Ad shigamru sara v'tziparnav. V'shamati mi abemari. Now we go back to Rav Chaim, Brisk. I heard, sheshama mi agon Rav Chaim de la maisa. This is amazing. Trichim ana livsok karishonim shesorvim shemechalim es ha-shabbos al ubar. We have to follow that opinion that we do move. We are Mechal Shabbos. Even though this baby is not viable, maybe not viable, the Shulchan Aruch itself says that you do not violate Shabbos. But Rav Chaim says we ignore the Shulchan Aruch. Why? Mishum the Suffolk Nefashos Lahakel. This is amazing. He's not just saying suffik nefashos for a doubtful life. We say we violate Shabbos, but a filu b'makom shenifsak b'shulchan aruch de lo mechalalim b'kol makom yivor b'beis Yosef b'hilos yom kippurim b'shem Rabbeinu Yeruchim de b'makom sheish machlokas rishonim b'kuch nefesh rov rishonim sovrim de'ein mechalim u'miyat rishonim sovrim de mechalim az mechuyavim anu lechalal mishum de'ein pokim kuch nefesh acharov. When he says we don't follow the majority of kuch nefesh, that means we don't follow the majority of poskim. We follow even the minority opinion. So It is, and I think Rabbi Devar's point is extremely well taken. It is a very difficult balance to figure out. We don't want to hold back at all. We say, if there's any doubt, we want to be Mechal Shabbos to save a life. In the back of our head, we say, well, Shabbos is Dechuya, so it's not Hutra, so we want to be careful. Then again, some say it's Hutra, and some say you should follow the minority opinion when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. So the amount of doubt in my head should be extremely minimal. Question is, and we're going to come to this in a minute, there are areas where it's just like, wait a second, how lenient can I allow myself to be? And we're going to talk about that. In fact, you know, just give another example. It's such a challenge. You know, here's one. Here's one. What about when it comes to a malacha for a patient who's a cholish yesh b'sakana, and I apologize, you know, the source sheets, I'll just say as a side point real quick in case you're wondering. Sometimes I translate, sometimes I didn't translate. The only reason is simply because I made them both in my office at work and at home. When I made them at home, I used Sepharia. Sepharia has the English and Hebrew, and I always try to use the English because I'm going to use it in shul or something. I want to have the English available. When I made it in my office, I only had the Hebrew available, and I just didn't have time to do all the translating. So that's why it's like sometimes it's translated, sometimes it's not. It's just, you know, where I made the source sheet. But anyways, so what if you have a patient who's a cholish yesh b'sakana, but if you don't do this malacha for them, they still will be fine, right? It's just, but they are a cholish. So, you know, it's a big question. So you have a case of a makash al chala, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow to be more meduric, but they have some kind of inner illness, an illness that's inside of them, right? It's not on their skin, let's say. Makash hachala eina tzricha omeid. We don't need any kind of expert, you know, decision about how bad it is. Shafilo ein sham bakim v'chola eino omer klum osim lo kol shor givin lasos lo v'chol. You do whatever you need for them. Makash yudim v'makirim v'oso choli. But if they know, oh no, I know my body. I know my illness. And in this illness, shemamtin v'ein tarachilo, but if I wait, I'll be fine. Then, asr l'chalav, afa pishahi makash l'chala. Even though they're dangerously ill, they say, you know what, I'll be fine. Maybe you don't do it. And the Mishnah Berurah says, there, shefilu v'makam shetari chilu in mechalin al yidei Yisrael, ele bedavar sheyesh lachush bo she'im lo yaseihu lo yechabed ala v'choliav v'yuchli stakin. They're likely to get very sick and be in danger. But kol shebor has to be very clear. She'im b'manias oso davar, that by not doing this act, so if it's a Torah prohibition, we should be extra careful if the actual act is not something that will be beneficial to the Cholish yesh bo sakana. I know this sounds very strict, because, and we're going to see things that go the opposite extreme very, very soon, but it's part of that balancing act that we're trying to figure out. Sometimes there are actions when we want to ask, well, is this... In fact, I'll give you an example here. The Shmir Shabbos gives it, has good examples, so I'm going to start by it. He says, Kol davar shebe shel miniyaso dehainu im lo yaseu klau tiye nishkafa sakanas o chashash sakana lachola miidach bor she'ein tzorech la'asos odaka b'shabbos kegon shusamach l'motzei Shabbos. It's Shabbos afternoon. It's like I only need to wait an hour, right? V'nitein lidchoso l'achar Shabbos ki az im yesh b'siyasa davar azeh mishum isra Torah. And it's a Torah prohibition, which probably will have to be even before Seisa Kochat, right? It had to even be before Bein Hashmashos, because then it's probably going to be a Derabanan anyways because of that. Ki az im yesh b'siyasa davar azeh mishum isra Torah ein osinoso v'im yesh bo rak isra Derabanan, then you can do it. So this starts to be one of the areas where we're going to talk about this a lot, where it's very, very helpful to start categorizing and knowing when something is Derabanan or Deoraisa. Anyways,
wouldn't he agree in that situation? Say, like, you're trying to decide whether to take your kid to the urgent care, right? And the urgent care closes at 8 and Shabbos ends at 8:22, right? So, like, there could be certain situations where waiting till after Shabbat eliminates your ability to get a certain kind of care, even if the person is not in a sakana.
Yeah, definitely. And so then you do it. Because remember, everything with this, we go lekula, right? We if there's any kind of suffix, if there's any reason to doubt whatsoever, we do it. It's just, I'm trying to point out, and we're going to go back and forth this, and I'm going to try to give some better calling. Don't worry, we're going to try to get there. But there is, it's just like some things kind of to be aware of. And by the way, and then we'll go to Rebbe Nick Devorah, some of this, as much as I started out by saying, as spiritual leaders, we should be teaching our communities about all these things. There's some things that we might not need to be teaching them, right? Some of these are just for you to put in your back pocket and keep in mind when you're making the decision. But we should be teaching our communities, hey, any suffix, you're Mechala Shabbos. If you're concerned, you have to do everything you can to save life. We, in the back of our minds, have to be ready when we're asked, wait a second, how far do we want to go? Might there be times when we say, you know what, this might not rise to the level of having to be Mechala Shabbos. Yes, Rabbi Nitavara.
I can think of two things where I think it's easier to make a judgment. So one is, for example, you can get there by Uber or you get in your car. Okay,
yeah.
One's Nisr Doraisa, one's a Nisr Dorabanan, you take the Uber.
Right.
Or you can do something with the Shinoi, right? You can use the telephone with the Shinoi. So why not do it with the Shinoi, right? So that's a way, I think, of addressing, one way of thinking about it, that, you know, that does take, because there's literally no difference, and you might, you know, and you should do the lesser Isser. The thing that I was thinking about for the other example is someone who has a chronic illness, right, where they kind of know for themselves, like, how urgent something is.
Yes.
I think the issue where it comes up a lot is people and their children, right? Like, should I, and especially people go, it's very hard to even do things like pick up the phone. My kid has an earache. Ah, is it a bad enough earache that I should pick up a phone to call the doctor? Ah, the doctor's Jewish, you know, stuff like that, where I think those questions, or, you know, or something that's an emergency, those become the issues where we really have to make sure that people know, act, you know, go and do it.
Right. And as we're going to see in depth tomorrow, especially when it comes to children or people who know have their own idiosyncratic, you know, illnesses or certain issues that they deal with, I'm going to show you some approaches to those that might mitigate any concern here. Well, you're going to see. I'm going to show you a few more things. I'm just trying to show this balance that we're trying to deal with. That's complicated, but we have a claw, right? Which is always that we go lekula, and if there's a suffix, we save life. Now, I want to continue this discussion, but going to another source. But now it's going to start to get a little bit more practical. And this source, all the stuff in Yuma is really relevant. This source starts to get really, really relevant. In fact, we start to have here a little bit of, and I'm sorry, I just realized I missed a couple of, oh yes, thank you. So you mentioned the Uber. Sorry, I missed those comments. And thanks for responding, Rabbi Nitavara. So now we start to get to some overlap between medical halacha and medical ethics. The definition of death is really medical halacha issue, right? I mean, medical ethics issue, but we're now going to deal with it in medical halacha issue. The definition of death, first of all, became very, very relevant in modern era because there's a famous, famous issue of the Hassam Sofer where, in Europe, there was a lot of pressure. It was actually, Moses Mendelssohn wrote a kuntres about this, and there was a lot of pressure to, bury bodies. Jews wanted to bury bodies right away. There's pressure to wait 3 days because there was one case in which someone was buried alive because Jews, bury so quickly and didn't have as good of diagnostics to determine if the person was dead. And the Chassam Sofer wrote in his tshuva, actually, look, if it just happened once in like very, very rare, in 200 years, that's not enough of a suffix for us to delay burial. This became part of the whole question of how far do we go with that suffix. And this question also becomes very relevant in as I mentioned, we're going to talk about it in terms of Shabbos, and so medical halacha, not medical ethics, but it's very relevant medical ethics as well, because the definition of death is, a massive question, and especially now in the modern world that we have such thing as brain death. And it actually all comes down to the basic principles of the value of life, which I'll discuss in a second. But let me just show you this Gemara first. So this is just continuing. That same sugya that we've been in, in Yuma. So the Gemara says as follows, and I just cut it up so it's not the whole thing, but it says, so first of all, you see why this is relevant for Shabbos. It says, Lomi boy safik, husham safik inusham, the is asya chai. The question is, what if there was a, I think I started this from a, like one line too late. It should have started at Misha Nafalav Mapolis. When a wall falls on Shabbos, right? A building fell down and you want to do efforts to save the person. And there's a concern, there's a big debate about what the concern is, but they say it's Chorich, digging up the rubble on Shabbos. So can you dig up rubble on Shabbos? Let's assume that it's an Isra De'oraisa. So, you know, the principles we've already seen this morning, or this afternoon, or this evening, sorry, wherever we are that any suffix, we are Mechal of Shabbos, right? So, yes, the Gemara says, Lo mi boy suffix hu sham suffix in Hashem. Of course, we're not sure that they're not sure there. We save life. But we also, it's whether if they're alive or not that we would be mefakin on. Ela filo suffix chai suffix mace. If there might be dead, mefakin, we can dig up the rubble. Not just that, the Israel, we're not even sure whether they're Jewish or not. We can, obviously then, we're still Mechal Shabbos. Matzo Chai, what if we save them? Obviously, Mefachim. Matzo Chai, Pshita. No, of course you would. Lo Tricha, the Filu Lechai Shah. No, what if they've lost so much blood that it's clear that they're not going to survive much longer? Could we still be Mechal Shabbos to save them? And the answer is yes, even to give them just a little bit longer. So then the Gemara asks, well, how do we know if they're alive? Ad Heichan Hu Bodek, and this becomes the question of brain death today, right? Ad chotmo. So one opinion is to their nose. V'yesh omrim ad libo. Some say no, until their heart. Badek umatzei al yonim mesim. What if we found the people above, the higher people? They are dead. Lo yomar kvar mesot tachtonim. Don't say that the bottom ones are dead. Maise hayet umatzei al yonim mesim tachtonim mechayim. Once they found that the people on top were killed, the ones on bottom were dead. So we see here the point is that we do everything we can to save life, even if we're not sure if they're there or not. It's all based on, he says at the end here, the Abba Shaul Modi, the Ikrech Yusuf Ba'apeh, the core of life is in the nose, the Ksiv Kol Asher Nishmas Ruach Chaim Ba'apav. That becomes the whole debate, because some say, is that just a simon that you know if someone's breathing, that must be that their heart's beating? Or is it mean that we accept brain death because the brain controls the respiratory function? Anyways, that's a debate we're not going to now, because that would take us much longer. There, I put the Beis Yosef there because that's part of the debate. He says, his gear says that not to check the nose or the heart, but to check the belly, the diaphragm, or the heart, which seems to give more credence to the breathing. But what I want to show you is this Bir Halacha. It's because it's so important. And this Bir Halacha, let me just pause for a second. I'm just going to go away from the screen just so we can talk for a second. Hi, Amy. Welcome. I didn't get to say hi before, but good to see you again. There is a big debate in the medical halacha world about the value of life. And what do we say the value of life is? Why should it be debate, right? Every life is sacred. Well, I'll even say how it plays out in terms of right wing, left wing. In the most like kind of right wing orthodox world, just put it that way, even though obviously there's, you know, differences in every, you know, there's obviously differences, but you'll hear this line, life is of infinite value. We do everything we can to prolong life. Life has to be, every life is of infinite value. That would mean you do everything possible to save every life for however long, no matter how much suffering there is, it doesn't matter. And there's another approach, which is to say that no, life is not of infinite value. Life is of relative value, relative to pain and suffering, right? We don't put someone through extreme pain and suffering to prolong every moment of life. And that's based on the story of the Amos of the Bay Rebbe, when the assistant of Rebbe broke the jug, you know, to stop his students from praying so that he could die. She allowed him to die so he wouldn't suffer anymore. So sometimes we don't do everything to prolong life. So anyways, and there's sources that support both. The sources that support that life is of relative value is the Rama and Shin Lamed Tes, which says that you can stop the woodchopper from chopping wood in order to allow a person to die. What's a source that supports the infinite value of life school? So we're going to read Bir Halacha right now. I want to share with you, because it's related to everything we've been discussing, that supports that side. And on the one hand, I personally take the more relative value of life perspective. I believe there are times when a person should be allowed to die because in the face of tremendous suffering. But I think this Mishnah Berurah is actually a tremendously beautiful source, and it's something that actually I have a lot of pride in. Like, I think it's really beautiful, and I'm proud that our tradition has such a view. So just with that background, and then I'll tell you a short story about it. But so to go back, so here's this Bir Halacha. I just think it's really, really important Bir Halacha. So, and I'm just going to read a couple lines, just again, because I don't think we have time. But here's what he says. So that he's quoting, you know, it's on, you know, these halachas that we've learning, that we violate Shabbos even with the doubt. And then it said, afilu chayisha, right? You even save life for a life that's not supposed to live very long. Why? How could that be? So he says, remember we said that one of the main sources for violating Shabbos is because the Gemara said, you can violate one Shabbos so you can observe many Shabbos. But then he says, but that wouldn't work here, right? Because this person is going to die. They're not going to live for next Shabbos. So how could it be? And he says, well, the Meiri says, and this is not the underlying part yet, this is the next thing. He says, Delav Davka Shabbos, Hu Adin Shar Mitzos, Kamoshikas of the Meiri. Because the Meiri says, this is an important Meiri, the Afal Pishin is Barshi, Efshar Lo Lichios, Afilu Sha'achas, even if they can't live for a full hour, they're not going to make it to the next Shabbos. But Shiva'osu Sha' Yashu Balibov Yisvad, they could do tshuva, they could say vidui. And it's worth it to save their life, to violate Shabbos, so they can say vidui. Amnam, here's the Bir Halacha that I think is so profound. He says, Amnam Be'emes, Nira de Kolze Hu Letayma Ba'am. That's just the reason about Ledina, but the actual Halacha is, Otalui Klab Mitzvos. It's not about the mitzvos that they do. De'ein hatam de dachinan mitzvah achas bishvil harbe mitzvos, el dachinan kol mitzvos bishvil chayim shel Yisrael. It's all just for the person's life. Because really, we said, the main verse that was the source for all this that we said earlier was because of v'chaybehem. Because of Harambam, Perek Beis Menucho Shabbos, she'ein mishpate Torah nekama ba'olam, the Torah is not about revenge in the world, ella rachamim v'chesed. We want to save all life because the Torah is about chesed. So still, it sounds a little bit extreme. Like, oh, you have to save every life. Like, we do everything we can to prolong life. But then here's where he goes with this in the next underlying piece. Lefize, boru dafilu katan marutzas. It doesn't matter if it's a child that has no ability to interact with the world. Nami mechalin afal pi delo yishmer shabosos. Even though this child can't observe Shabbos, we violate Shabbos for them. Gam lo yizvadet. They're not going to be able to say vidui. They're never going to grow into a person who's a bar mitzvos, right? Who's an adult in the category of mitzvos. But it doesn't matter. We value their life. They are telem elokim. Afal pi kein, mechalin kumo kein hu adin cheresh v'shota. It doesn't matter if they're deaf or they're blind. Every life we give value to. Afal gav te'enu b'nei mitzvos mikom makom, mechalin aleim dehad lo mikaymi mitzvah hu mishum onsayu. The fact that they can't do a mitzvah is an onus. They have no choice. V'lo nafik klal ze, miklal ze. But we still save their life. This, I think, is just, to me, an incredibly beautiful point that he's making, that even though, yes, I think it's extreme to say you have to prolong every life in the hospital, no matter what, no matter how much they're suffering, but to say, you know what, and at the end of the day, we value every life, is incredibly meaningful. I'll just show you a real quick story, and then go on to the next point. Once we had a patient who graduated from a yeshiva day school. He moved to L.A. When you finish day school, you're supposed to go where many of you are. You're supposed to go to Israel, right? You're not supposed to go to L.A. That's the wrong direction. And he ended up in L.A. and he wasn't observing, you know, Torah mitzvahs anymore. And he had lots of tattoos and was doing all kinds of drugs. And he ended up in our emergency room. And he had a very Jewish name. And the social worker couldn't get through to him. So she asked me to come see him because the name was so Jewish. And I met him and I wasn't expecting, you know, that kind of a name. He was like really a druggie. It was really sad. And he said to me, you know, I don't do Jewish stuff anymore. And I don't talk to my parents anymore. I haven't talked to them in 2 years. I didn't even know I'm here in L.A. And I don't care. And it was really sad. And then actually what happened, he had drunk so much alcohol, I didn't know this was possible, that he had liver failure. I mean, I knew it was possible, not at age like 18. So anyways, I got, you know, we built a little bit of rapport. The next day I came in, it turned out that he had declined significantly and he was not able to communicate anymore even. And it was even potentially life-threatening. So they asked me, do you know who his parents are? We should call them. And I thought to myself, wow, this is a hard question because he doesn't want to talk to his parents, but we could track him down because I know his name and the community he's from, and it's not that hard to find. So we decided, let's call them. We called them, and we told them that he might not even survive, and they were there that day. They didn't even know he was in L.A. They came that day. So anyways, when they arrived, he became even worse, and the question became, he's likely not going to survive. It was really sad. And the parents said, well, we want to say goodbye to him. We want to talk to him. We want to apologize to him. Maybe he wants to apologize to us. We want to interact with him. And the question was as follows. It was one of the hardest questions I ever had. He was intubated at this point because every time that he would be intubated, he would pull it out. So they had to first restrain him. Then they had to sedate him. He couldn't even, he was totally not alert. And they told his parents, if we would let the sedation run out, we have to extubate him. Because otherwise he's going to do it himself. And he's going to hurt himself. But if we let the sedation run out and extubate him, he will die within a matter of days. They said, well, what if we do nothing? So if you do nothing, he's also going to die, but it's going to take months. It'll just be months of gradual decline. So they asked me, they were very concerned about halacha, this family. They really, really cared. They asked, and they were embarrassed to ask their rabbi, sadly. So they asked me what I thought, and I thought this was way too hard of a question for me. So they asked, so the question is, do you just let him gradually die on his own, or do you withdraw hastening his death, but then you get to say goodbye at least to him and interact with him? So I asked the rabbi who was actually here at the time and in the hospital, and I brought him to see them, and he said, no, you cannot withdraw. So that's what they did. Then, though, the next day, I got a call from them. Can you come to our room to say vidui with our son before it's too late? And I thought, that's strange. I thought it was going to be a few months. I went up there, and I saw he wasn't intubated anymore, and his sister was there now, late in bed with him, and he was dying. In fact, he did die right then. And I was a little surprised because that wasn't what I thought we were doing. So then after he died, we stepped out of the room and the parents were really upset, obviously. And they said to me, Rabbi, I bet you're wondering, I know you told us, or the rabbi told us we can't withdraw, but we just felt like, how could we not say goodbye to him? So in the middle of the night, we were just so overwhelmed. We just told the resident, please just do it. Let the sedation run out with extubate and let us say goodbye. So we did it. He woke up this morning. And immediately when he saw us, he was so appreciative that we were here. We apologized to him. He apologized to us. He told us we love him. We told him we love him. We had this most amazing day together. And we even were laughing and reminiscing and telling jokes. And then the afternoon started to decline. And then he died. And she said, we feel so guilty. We feel so horrible now. It was the best day, but now we've violated halacha. So they said, you know, so then their question was, did we really violate halacha? So I had to think quickly on my toes, and I thought of this Mishnah Berurah, and I thought of that Me'iri. I thought, wait a second, if we could be Mechal al Shabbos for 1 hour, so the person could do vidu, could just say tshuva, do tshuva, that's what happened here. And I said, actually, I think you did the right thing. I told them the source, because this was a family, that's not usually what we do pastorally, we tell people sources, but this was a family that was like really into like halacha. And I told them that, and it really comforted them. And then I immediately went back to my office and I called Rav Asher Weiss because I felt so bad. I said, did I say the wrong thing? And actually, he was really quiet. And I said, hello, hello. And he said, I'm sorry. I'm crying. I can't. This story is so sad. He said, you did the exactly the right thing. I agree with you. And I'm going to write a tshuva that you can give to them. And he wrote a tshuva, and he published, and he has this tshuva, and I shared it with them, and they were very comforted by that. Anyways, that's like just an example of how crucial of that source is, and then why that Mishnah Berurah, that Birkat Halacha, speaks to me so much.
Say that? Like,
sorry?
Would you now Melech Tchila give that tzak?
Maybe, I don't know. I'd have to see like case by case. That's a good question. Maybe I would. So let's go back now to a few more sources now. One thing, and I'm not going to, the few next things I want to look at are not, I want to just cover briefly because there's so much, but we saw that all these things we said, lo halcho b'kuch nefesh acharov. And then there's this whole question though, we saw it said, well, what if they're Yehudi, Einu Yehudi, you, if it's a suffix, you're Mechal Shabbos. But if you would know that it was Einu Yehudi, the Gemara seems to imply that you would not be Mechal Shabbos. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch, and I've been saying that we're going to learn mostly Shin Chav Kes, but it's also Shin Lamed. We'll do that tomorrow, especially with Yoledes. But it says it there very clearly. Kutit Ein Miyaldino Sabe Shabbos, Afilu B'davar She'ein Bo Chilu Shabbos. So there is this halacha that we could not be Mechal Shabbos for Einu Yehudi. What do we do with that? Because to me, I mean, I don't know about you, but it bothers me. Like, I don't feel so good about that. So I want to share with you, first of all, a fascinating Mishnah Berurah. We've been talking today a lot about, like, this struggle that we go back and forth, right? Of, like, sometimes we are very lenient. And then, oh, but what about this? Oh, no, be lenient. Oh, but it's only dechuya. Oh, but be lenient. There's this Mishnah Berurah, I think, speaks to this this tension very well. And then Reb Moshe Feinstein's angry response also. So the Mishnah Berurah, in responding to this issue, that we're not supposed to be Mechal Shabbos for Einu Yehudi, says, V'afilu b'schar, de'b'chol mi'aldi mishum Eva, even though on the weekday we could, because of our concern of Eva, hacha asr mishum de'yechol lishtameit, v'lomar de'ei mechalin Shabbos ki'im le'harut de'mintar shabta, k'asim ha'ginavar de'b'makom de'ikan le'mechash le'eva, gam b'chagav ne'shari. Okay, fine, we shouldn't do it, but if we're concerned about Eva, we're concerned they're going to hate us, then we could be Mechal Shabbos for Einu Yehudi. Then it's Shari. Im Ein Ba Chilu. Especially, ideally, if there's no Chilu. But then he says this line. This gets quoted a lot. So as on the one hand, I opened up, and Rebbeinu Devorah opened up with a great story about, you know, her rabbi, and I mentioned that all spiritual leaders should be, we saw that Mishnah Berurah, that we're supposed to be teaching our communities, you know, that you have to be Mechal Shabbos for saving life, and that's so essential. But you also sometimes hear this following message. Veda, the harofim bezmanin. So obviously this is Russia 100 years ago, but maybe it's true today in some ways, actually. He says, the doctors of our day, afilu hayoster kisherim, the firmer ones, einam nizharim bezei klal, the maisa b'chol Shabbos shenosim kama parsos, they travel every Shabbos their fuos of the kochavim. Bekosim v'shochkim samamanin be'atzma, and they're writing prescriptions, and they're giving out cutting drugs, they're being mechal Shabbos for Einu Yehudim every week. They have all sheyus mochu, and they have nothing to rely on. It's not allowed. The filim name of the mutar lechal Shabbos is for their abanan. Even you could say it's for their abanan mishum eva beina ovi gululim after the gamze enabaru. You know, I'm not sure about that. Is for their raisa bevade after the kliyama, but for is for their raisa for sure they can't mechal le Shabbos gamurim heim bemezit Hashem yishmarenu. The Mishnah Berurah is not happy about doctors the mechal Shabbos for enam yehudim. And he thinks this is a big problem. And I've personally also heard rabbis, you know, speak out about this, like, oh, the doctors are too lenient when they go to the hospital on Shabbos. They need to be more careful. So again, you see this tension. Reb Moshe Feinstein was shocked by this Mishnah Berurah. Good point, Dalia, right, about the potential gayer in the community. How this could be, you mean how this could be like upsetting. The source could be very upsetting. And I personally find it, you know, morally troubling. But I'm going to show you one approach. I think that I'm at the best.
So I just God forbid, like, somebody in the community was like, oh, I know that person's not officially Jewish yet, and so I'm going to make a different decision.
Yes. Right. Like, we're very horrible. Right. So the Igros Moshe, or Moshe Feinstein, is just, he says, Upella Allah Kona Chavetz Chaim. I'm shocked by Chavetz Chaim. And then he basically says, like, wait, first of all, in Russia, did you not have... weren't there like massive pogroms? Like, shouldn't you be a little more careful about what you were saying? Like, how could he have been so lenient? And he says, even today, the gam ha chazinan shechashash lezei penya se eva mizei l'shelachin hitfis l'matze. He says he even published in the bottom of the Mishnah Berurah, there's even a little footnote that said I'm just talking about Alzeisha Kavana Sohu Rak Medias India. I'm only talking about in India. It's not in Russia, no, God forbid. Why would you have said that? If there's any suffek, we should be lenient. So the Piskei Tshuvos, this book on the Mishnah Berurah, he basically says, you know, nowadays we should always be lenient because, first of all, there could be any suffek that it could lead them to hate us, it could lead them to treat us worse. Also, if you do something, it will lead to nowadays. You might think that no one's watching or no one knows, but word travels very quickly, and therefore you should be lenient in all cases. Now, I don't find this source morally satisfying because it's only because of concerns of Ava, like only because they're going to hate us, but I find it practically satisfying because he basically says, in every case, always, you should just be machal, just do it. Don't hold back. Don't worry. Oh, are they Jewish? Not, whatever. Just be Machal Shabbos for everyone equally. And even though the reasoning is not necessarily, what we might have wanted to see, at least he quotes all the great poskim. In fact, some of them, he quotes on the footnote, some of them say, as long as you have in mind that you're doing this to protect your community, it's now becomes a Malacha Sheinu Tzricha LeGufa. That's his argument. A lot of people don't agree with that. Rabbi Avad Yosef has a whole tshuva disagreeing with that. But anyways, I'm just bringing this up to point out the issue because it's an issue people talk about a lot. And the answer basically is we are Mechalel Shabbos for Yehudim and Inim Yehudim equally, even though there has been some concern in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Gemara, that is something that we do today. I'm going to take this another direction, but similar issue. Remember, today we're doing a lot of kind of like bouncing back and forth between kind of concerns. We're going to get much more practical tomorrow. There's another great, great book. If you're curious, actually, I'll just show you some of the stuff that I'm using because I have it all here in my office. So this is on the Shulchan Aruch. You know, obviously there's problems with using these Kitzer Svarim that just kind of summarize things because, you know, we want to be able to, and as all of you are doing and have we want to be able to look it up ourselves and develop our own conclusions. But there is great stuff in a lot of these books that collect all the random different opinions. So this book, Piskei Tshuvos, thick, thick book. This is just half of Chelek Gimel of Shulchan Aruch. It's a really wonderful resource because it just covers so much. And a very new resource, also two volumes on Mishnah Berurah, on Chelek Gimel, is Mishnah Achrona, Mr. David Lichtenstein of Muncie, who hosts, you know, Headlines podcast, my favorite podcast. It's really great because it does a really nice job of quoting different opinions. And it's not true. Like, there's also the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah. Personally, I don't love the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah because it's very one-sided. It tries to, like, push one point. It never shows you differences of opinions. So anyways, those are books I use a lot that I like. So anyways, in there, he has an interesting point. Again with the concerns. So he said, we saw this whole piece about Suffolk Nefashos Lahakel. He says, Hadin Shemachalinus Hashabbos Gam Esavik Puch Nefesh Mivor B'Shulchan Aruch. We read this. In fact, I think I wanted to see the second paragraph here. He says, "Oh yeah, here's what it is." Davar Atidi. What if it's in the future? So we know many poskim say even something that will lead to a suffix sakana, you should be Mechal Shabbos for. But he says, Davar Haitidi She'ein Metzius Hasakana Lefaninu. But it's not there at all now. Einu Matir Chelo Shabbos. The Pesuk Chazon Ish. Only in the distant future. You just open up every store. He would say, no, one day I might be poor, so I have to work on Shabbos, right? You have to weigh it very carefully. There's nothing there right now to be concerned about. But that leads to another issue I'll share with you just before I show you the source. Because this I think is really, really interesting and really important. This is what I use in my head. So let's jump outside real quick back to the world of medical ethics, not medical halacha. And actually, this is a women's issue in particular. A really interesting issue that that helps me understand what we're going to learn next. That is, let's say a woman, this is common in my family, I'm sure many of ours, is a BRCA carrier, and they're concerned about developing breast or ovarian cancer. So there's many things that can be done about that. One thing is surgical, prophylactic surgeries. So a prophylactic oophorectomy, which is removal of ovaries, is a halakhic question because that could potentially be serous, right? It makes a person infertile, causes early onset menopause. And so this becomes a question. And I once had this question when I first started working here, about 15 years ago, with a woman. She went straight from her doctor's appointment. She found out she had this. She wanted to get an oophorectomy. She wanted to know if it's allowed halakhically. And she wanted to ask her rabbi. And I was working with honor, but it was not my decision. We went to her rabbi. I don't want to get too many details, but I asked her rabbi, and he did not feel like that this could be justified because of the concern of Cyrus. So he brought it to a great gadol in Israel. Let's just leave it at that. And that rabbi said, no, she may not. An oophorectomy is not permissible halakhically. So she didn't get it. It bothered me a lot. Yes, Cyrus is not for women, except for the gross, as I said, their ISA, but still, he was still very concerned. Yes, Mithal.
What was the problem that the doctor said? I missed that one.
The concern was that she could get ovarian cancer, which ovarian cancer could be very deadly because it's harder to detect.
And a BRCA gene carrier.
Yeah, she was a BRCA gene carrier. She was a fertile woman. And this particular rabbi felt that they could not justify it because she was only a carrier. That was the concern. She's a carrier, but she doesn't have cancer right now. So it really bothered me. So I was sort of like researching it more because I was disturbed by that. And I collected some studies that showed the likelihood of a person and how life-saving it could be if they were to have this surgery and they could still have children. Like the concern was they could still have children now and then have the surgery. It all depends on their age. There's a lot of issues. But anyways, the point was I felt like it should be able to be justified. So I brought this to Dr. Avram Steinberg, and when I went to meet with him once, his office was right next to Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg's office in the Encyclopedia Talmudit, and we brought it to him, and he wanted to think about it. We brought him all the data, and then he came back to us, and he said we could publish this, and we did. Dr. Steinberg published it. I published it in my book, and Dr. Steinberg then published it, which is much more authoritative than his, and Rav Osher Weiss then asked him later, and he said the exact same thing. He said, I believe that you can do it, maybe even have to. But you for sure can do it. What's the halachic reasoning, though? What you need a halachic justification. The justification was that the genes, now that we know enough about DNA and genes and genetics, to know that the gene itself is a rodafe. That was the halachic category used. It's a rodafe. The gene is a rodafe. The gene's there now. The gene is a rodafe. So just like we saw that Chazon Ish, no, it has to be something in front of you right now. It is in front of you now, though. The gene. You have the gene. You have the rodafe. And you can do what you need to do about the gene. So anyways, that I think was a very important stock. And since then, we've guided many people in doing that and hopefully it saved lives. That's a good thing. So anyways, what about on Shabbos? So I want to share with you, that first woman got very sick. It's a really sad story. I didn't have enough control over that situation anyways. And not that I would now, but at least it's now been published. There's a stock about it. But hopefully her story inspired this, and then it hopefully saved other lives.
Did someone go back to the rabbis that she contacted and gave them like?
It wasn't a rabbi that did go back to and change her mind. I agree. I wish that rabbi's not alive anymore either. But it wasn't the type of rabbi that can just kind of go change their mind. It's a very upsetting and it's a troublesome story. But I think it helps you understand this. So let's go back to our source sheet. How do you determine? And I just thought this Nishras Abraham, in fact, I'll just share it with you one more time. So speaking of books, though, if we're talking about books on the Shulchan Aruch, my favorite when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, Nishras Abraham is on all four Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. It's written by a doctor, Dr. Abraham, and he wrote it, and then he often asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Neuwirth, and others, and then either he quotes their opinions or he quotes his own opinion and then what they said. And it's just really nice because it's written by someone on the front lines as a medical doctor. And he says the following theory, which I think is great, and I think about this always on Shabbos. I'm trying to figure out, what's right to do. So he says, "Shemati mimori v'rabi shlita balashmir Shabbos kolchasa." Rav Neuwirth, right? Shekein dato v'nimuko imo shekivan shekematu bituach shemachar v'Shabbos. Oh, I'm sorry. This is talking about a case. I didn't give you the background. This is talking about a case where it's Friday, Erev Shabbos is Yom Tov, and the question was, what's better, violate Yom Tov or Shabbos? And technically, it's better to violate Yom Tov than Shabbos. Right? But if you're not sure, should wait, right? If it's something that's really not probably not a problem, you can't violate Yom Tov either, right? You're just not sure what it's going to be. So that's what he says. He says, what if you're sure that tomorrow, b'Shabbos, nacholi yeh b'sakanas nefashos, az gam hayom b'yom shishi k'shiyadayin ain't hu b'sakana. Now you're not in sakana. It's just Friday. It's Erev Shabbos. It's Yom Tov. Harodef kvar nimsa. The rodef, though, is there, meaning some kind of, you know your body, right? It's whether it's a fever or a headache or whatever it is that you feel like, you know what? Or, and I shouldn't say you. The person feels that they have something that's going to develop into an illness. The rodef is there already. Kvar nimsa lechein. Muta lechalal hayom es hayom tov shu iser kal kadei dimnoa mimenu es hasakana shel machar melechakos lemachar lechalal es hashabbos shu iser chamor. And then he asks Rav Shlomo Zalman, he says, Gamani sover kemoso dekivan she'adam mesukam etzrichim ratnai lasos dialysia. That was like a dialysis question. You should do it now. I just think that his point there about using rodef as a conceptual way of figuring out what we're going to do and what we're not going to do is a really nice way of helping us kind of determine. And it's a big leniency, much more lenient than a Chazon Ish that I just showed you. And I think it's really important. Now that I said that, and part of why I'm doing this, you know, I'm trying to show you this back and forth between when can we be very lenient? When should we not be lenient, right? Is sometimes people take the concept of Pekuach Nefesh too far, right? And we're just like, oh, everything Pekuach Nefesh saved my life. But the truth is, it's not, it's sometimes it is relevant. It is realistic. And it's not crazy. And so I just want to give you a couple examples before we start to conclude and show you a few more last things. And so these are just things that I've collected over the years as I've been, you know, as I learn, I keep notes of everything, and I have a Pekuach Nefesh folder. And I just found some interesting sources that I want to share with you. So for example, Rav Avadya Yosef in one place refers to agunas, not giving a woman a get. He says, she'ein lecha shas hadacha goldo mitikanas agunas. You should do everything you can to help an aguna. V'she'ein lis atza b'davar, and not to hold back. Kamo she'ein lis atza b'pekuach nefesh. He compares freeing an aguna to pekuach nefesh. So everything we said about if there's a suffix, doing everything you can, meet Mechalo Shabbos, whatever it is, it's that important also to free an aguna. So similar that he uses the phrase Pekuach Nefesh. Rav Sternbach, who's not from the most, you know, modern Orthodox, but I can tell you a story about him, a good story about him, but I don't want to take all my time, but let me know if you want to hear it. Anyways, what about, we're going to talk about this tomorrow, Sakanas Aver. Can you be Mechalo Shabbos for a danger to a limb? So technically the Shulchan Aruch says no. Not a deraisa, at least. You can only be mechala derabanan to save a limb. But then he says the following in the midst of his tshuva that he permits being mechala Shabbos to save a limb. He has this following fascinating line. He says, "On the ikar tames lihu, the reason why I allow violating Shabbos to save a limb is shibli shtei reglayim, to not have two legs. In other words, for a person who has two legs and they have a choice, they're going to lose a leg if they're not mechala Shabbos, or they can save that leg by being mechala Shabbos." He says, it could be that nevar la'adam teshukata chayim. We could lose their like desire to live. V'hi gufa b'kuach nefesh. Just the overwhelming emotional pain that could be caused by not allowing them to go to their doctor on Shabbos could be a b'kuach nefesh because of the emotional suffering. Also, when it comes to fertility treatments, Dalia, you're talking about your help, that the work you do in that regard, I'm sure many of you do. So Rav Sternbach has a fascinating, again, he was asked by a question here, I remember the question. The question was, Nidrashti al ish v'ishakan, someone asked him, Shilafida sarufim I efshar la isha lis aber mi ba'ala, rak yesh efsharut la ba'al yotzi zera shalo. Right, only through artificial insemination. She needs to get pregnant through artificial insemination. So at the time he wrote this tshuva, this is in Krach Gimel of his, as a quick side point, Rav Sternbach has written 7 volumes. In the first volume, he says artificial IVF in general, he says, is forbidden. Isser Gummer is what he uses. In every volume, he gets softer about it. Until the most recent volume, he says, it's a chiyuv. It's the craziest thing. He went from saying it's forbidden to saying it's allowed, to saying it's mitzvah, to saying it's obligatory. And I asked him about this personally. I actually asked him once, and he said, I'm conservative, and I don't want to just take on new medical technology. I need to be proven first that it's good. But I'm willing to be proven. Anyways, in the course of his change, he writes, when he said, you know, he says, look, many people don't allow IVF. Many great rabbis didn't allow IVF. This is going back to the 80s, right? Early 80s. When it was brand new. He says, Amna, af shadati kanal, that it's, you know, not necessarily ideal, is what he said at that time. It might be problematic logically. L'chein ani nimna lahatir. I'm not going to allow it. Kvar horakein hagon bal kilos Yaakov. Shemati shmua sheyesh bali horash hatir. But I heard a rumor that some rabbis allow IVF. Ulifamim karov hadavar lepekuach nefesh. And it could sometimes be pekuach nefesh because a person could, because of the emotional suffering. V'ani hanir niyazaiti kasafti. In other words, v'habocher yivacher. In other words, this was his way of saying, if you want to do it, you can do it. I just can't say yes because in my community I'll get in trouble. So I'm not going to say yes, but I'm going to kind of hint to you that it's allowed. Anyways, I thought that was another fascinating example of just areas where we can expand. So I'm probably giving you a headache or like whiplash, and I'm doing this intentionally, of just kind of like, wait, you can do everything. Wait, you can't do anything. Wait, you can do everything. Wait, everything's pekuach. Wait, the doctors are being too lenient. Wait, they're not. That was only in Russia. And I don't know what he was saying because, you know, we're just going back and forth. But I'm trying to just give you some of the background because tomorrow and Wednesday we're going to get much more practical. And yes, he talked about doing Shabbos. He says you violated Derabanan. That's in a more recent tshuva. And the truth is, it's not hard to do it with Derabanan, now, especially now that we have Uber and things like that. But anyways, so just a couple more of these issues before we close, and then tomorrow, like I said, we'll get much more relevant. So one of the issues that comes up, there's a lot written on this, and it's mostly in Ora Chaim, Taf Reish Yud Ches, about Yom Kippur. But there's this whole discussion about like how much you need to know from the doctors, how certain do the doctors have to be, what if there's a debate amongst the two doctors, right? The Gemara, the Mishnah said, Chola machino sol pi bakin, dim ein sham bakin, machino sol pi atzmo, ad shumer dai, right? We first listen to the doctor, but we also listen to the patient. And I'm going to show you a new theory tomorrow that's going to go much more in depth on this. But basically, just to save time here, because there's a lot here, a lot of interesting stuff, but basically what the Shulchan Aruch between Shin Chav Ches and Ora Chaim, Taf Reish Yud Ches, basically what it says is, you listen to the doctors. You don't need a majority of doctors. Even if you have two doctors against 100, two say you need to violate Shabbos, and 100 say you don't need to, you could violate Shabbos. So, or even just one, and even sometimes they don't have to be Jewish or not. And also, we believe the patient. We follow the patient. Unless an expert says, the only time we witness is if an expert says that what they're doing will certainly harm them. Okay, so then we have to convince them not to. But Yom Kippur says clearly, if the patient says, sorry, honey, I need it, you give them, even the doctor says they don't, you listen to the patient. So that's all just, you know, I think it's basic, but just an important, you know, whole sugya, so I just feel like I should mention it. But we don't follow the rove when it comes to pekuach nefesh, you follow the minority, and so you don't need the world's biggest expert, you don't need to have all the doctors saying, you can have any kind of hint that this is necessary for that patient, and you can give it to them. Right. So that's all this here. The Piskei Tshuva sums this up nicely. It says, "Im rofem mumche omer behechleit rofem barush ein tzarich lechal Shabbos." The doctor says, "I'm certain they don't need this thing." And by the Shabbos, the adam echad she'en rofe. But another person who's not even a doctor, right? Nowadays, right? Since COVID, everyone became like a medical expert. Everyone's an expert, right? The adam echad she'en rofe. They're not a rofe. Ach baki rofua, but they read a lot of, you know, or something. Or Rofe Zutar, or they're not like the best doctor in the world, but you know, when they did go to medical school, and then they went on to be something else. She'ena mumche, omrim shetarich lechalel. You still are mechalel Shabbos just because of any possibility. Ba'anu lemachlokas aposkim. So now we have this big machlokas. Ba'mekel lo hefseed. And if you're mekel in this area, that's not a problem. The klal gadol v'yadenu b'sfeika d'edina. Because we have this rule, and this is really what I quoted from the Brisk Rav before, Machlokas Aposkim, Holchim, Bekoch Nefesh, Lahakel. We always go lenient to be an Efshar, Al Yedei Nachri, Al Yedei Fei. Okay, if there's ways you can do it to minimize the Isser, so that's great. Just a couple other things. This is a very big issue, and like I said, I did not put the whole entire Gemara here, but this whole Gemara about Kol Hayotzi Lahatzel Chozrin Lemakoman, the whole issue of Hitiru Sofim Shumti Chilaso. If you're going to go to war, we say, we're not going to send soldiers out to war and then say they have to stay out there because then they won't want to go. So too, many people apply, many have applied this to doctors, right? Or nurses or others. Why will I go to the hospital for an emergency? Why will I go for a cell call if I know that I'm going to get stuck in another community? I'm going to be away from home the whole Shabbos. Why should I volunteer to do that? Or why should I want to do that? And the Gemara basically only allows, the Mishnah only allows 2,000 amos. but not to return completely. And there's one opinion that Rav Yehuda Amarav, shechozrin b'kli zayin l'makom, they actually return b'kli zayin. So this means carrying in Rishus HaRabim, and this could be that it's a deraisa, but there's a big debate about this, because some say no, you can only carry the kli zayin, you declare that within those 2,000 amos, within the tchum, but, and also because they were afraid that they're on the battlefield, their enemies might come to kill them. That's what you see in the Gemara, there's a machlokas, only if it was a victorious battle, not if it was a losing battle. Only when they won the battle, then they can have 2,000 amos. But if they lose, they can go all the way home, because that's to save their life. But the main difference we see in this Gemara is that if they can go all the way back or not, it's not really the carrying weapons issue, but what we see from this Gemara, basically, is that only really rabbinic prohibitions of tehumin can be violated, but not for certain Torah prohibitions, which is when we allow only for danger. And that was what the Tosfos says here. And this becomes a big debate. I'll just show you the basics of the debate so you can be aware of this concern. So the Shulchan Aruch said, Kol yotzim lehatzil, chozim b'chizayin lemakoman. Bishop Brua says, Kedei shelo achshilim la'asid lavo, shelo yirtzu lehatzil out. Now, there's a massive debate between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein allowed, and I put just the main part of the tshuva, it's a long tshuva, but the main part here, I don't remember if I put this in the main sheet that I sent you before, but I'll send this new sheet to Rav Nit Dvorah so you can have it. But he says, it's very clear to me, he says, I believe that it's for sure not, they do not add an Isra Deraisa. In these cases, he really goes on to explain the contradiction between that Gemara and another Gemara. And he basically, his main point is, he says here as follows. I underline what I think is the main point. He says, Al-Kaponi Pasha Davar, Shlohetir Malacha De'eraisa. The rabbis did not allow to return. Remember, there's no more Pekuch Nefesh. The person's life is already saved. The doctor went to the hospital. The Hatzalah volunteer already went to save the life. They now want to go back home. But it's not to save a life. Right, so he says, Al Kopanim Pashu Hadavar, Shalitiru Malacha de Raisa, El Inyan Kli Zayin. It was only Kli Zayin, that was the one unique case of Al Barofa, Shinikra Beshabbas Lachola, Bechain Chachma, Habala Yelet, or a doula, midwife, Habala Hatzil Min Hadleka, Af Al Gav Shishlem Al Paim Amlachoruch. They now have a new Tchum Shabbos, right? They have now 2,000 Amos from where they are now. Yukomakom, Gam Makonam, Emam, Enam, Utarim Lachzor, Inze, Yoser, Mitchum Shabbos. They cannot go back to violate the Raisa, Koshkin, Shalot, Lachal Shabbos. The Surah Torah. That was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's opinion. Now, as has been mentioned, like for a doctor or someone, it could mean going back with an Uber or something. There are ways to do it with a Derabanan, but the big reason this is a debate is because Rav Moshe Feinstein allowed it with the Deraisa. So he says, "Ulam re'isi b'shut igras Moshe shenishal akach v'zei l'shonam." Here's what Rav Moshe said: "Le'inyan ha'chazara le'beito b'makom achola." It was impossible. Now, many people point out, Rav Moshe writes in that tshuva, it's impossible to get home, or it was only through very dangerous neighborhoods, and you know, there was no other option, there was no way to get a cab in the middle of the night. Sham kola Shabbos or afilu zman gadol, but to stay there in the hospital for all of Shabbos or most of Shabbos, yesh lachu shebnei beiso lo yanichu b'pam acher. The family's not going to let them go next time. And they themselves are not going to want to go. And he says that they can mesik sham tiyesh lahatir lachzor im rechav she'en yachol lasik nachri sholichenu berechav. They can drive their car back. That was Rav Moshe Feinstein's opinion. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, I don't agree. This is a huge chiddush, and he says he goes on to explain why he thinks he's wrong. Actually, he gives an interesting sort of practical explanation of why he thinks it's wrong. He says, this is just like that Mishnah Berurah read before, right? There's too many lenient doctors are shared. Lagabi didei hachashashu emes sheheim chashudim limanam melechas lahatzilas afolim im lo yuchlu achar kach lachzor berechem lebetim. They are going to be afraid to go to the hospital. You don't let them go back. In Komakom, he says, even though they're going to be afraid, just because they're afraid, I have no power to allow a deraisa to be overridden. The Chassam Sofer already said, they could go back. He lets them go back through a derabana, through a like a non-Jewish train. Even though I think, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that the Chassam Sofer was too lenient. leilet or bashar inyan shabukoch nefesh ki'im linyan ze hishvo sam shiyu gam heim kan she'ir. They only allowed them to be within that tchum. Harishi yesh lehem al paim am lecho ruach mipnei she'im lo yirushayim lezuzim mekom liyus shav lebnei ha'ir yesh lechush to b'chom macheres imnu me'atzim lavo. Even though that was all that was really allowed, aval lo masinu she'adifu osam yosim mi'an she'ir la'atir osam l'shuv le'besam. I don't say that they should be allowed to go all the way home. B'shamas b'galut shalachri mikol makom for horaz zakeh. Okay. Some stuff already allowed it, so I'm not going to fight with him. And therefore, I'm not going to allow overriding an Isser De'eraisa, even though people will feel bad about it. And so he disagrees with Reb Moshe Feinstein. I want to share with you one more thing before we conclude, but we have 5 minutes. And just any reactions, comments, disagreements, questions before I just show you this last thing that I'll show them. I'm going to email this to Rebbe Nidumar right now before I forget. So, you know, how you feel about it. Like, this is, it's a machlokes, Ramosha versus Rosh Hashanah Zalman. Rosh Hashanah Zalman really disagrees sharply with that Ramosha, and Rosh Hashanah Zalman was not a machmir, but yeah. Yes, I think it.